Anybody hear any Google news this week? For those of you that haven't, Google was making headlines because of Silicon Valley diversity issues. Fortunately for Google, unlike Uber, where the diversity issues came from the top, Google's problem came from a mid-level to lower-level employee that fundamentally questioned the ability of his female coworkers. The employee wrote a manifesto. In some cases, he cited actual news sources for some of his facts, and in other cases, he made statements with no scientific basis. Google found themselves in a pickle. On the one hand, the purpose of this employee's manifesto was to demonstrate what he calls an echo chamber of thought, which didn't really allow for more of a conservative viewpoint. Basically, Google is too liberal. And by releasing this manifesto, the employee was fired, which I'm going to go on record and say, rightfully so, for creating a hostile work environment. The employee shot back and said this was a violation of his free speech. And the thing about free speech is, it's free when you're not speaking on someone's private network. And here's the twist for this week's episode. I'm not talking about this diversity issue, but I am going to talk about Google's private network and how that applied to last week's topic of certain technological companies being quote-unquote too big and how certain government agencies want to break them up. Yeah, this one's kind of a stretch, but bear with me. I'm Joey Lombardi, and this is SourceCast Episode 84. Oh, well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick. Now you can't use a car because you didn't work or live. Sometimes I wonder what I'm going to do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Before we get to our main story, let's discuss the acquisitions that have taken place over the last 7 days. Accenture is buying a digital marketing agency for the technical and creative skill set. Accenture is picking up Wirestone, a 200-person marketing agency who claims a client list such as Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, and Hewlett-Packard Inc. This is an interesting acquisition because Accenture is sort of following in IBM's footsteps. If you recall, IBM purchased several marketing firms last year, and I believe the intent of those marketing firms is to help them diversify their business because they're getting trashed in their old consulting categories like IT by Accenture. So now not only is Accenture beating them at their own game, but they're chasing after the new game. This is one to watch. Everyone's favorite business intelligence tool Tableau has acquired ClearGraph, a startup that lets you analyze your data using natural language. Don't feel like learning SQL? Don't worry about it. Tableau expects to use this ClearGraph acquisition to enable natural language query integration into their toolset. And if you've been wondering why I've skipped a lot of the acquisition news over the summer, that's because there wasn't any acquisition news this summer. And apparently there's a reason for that. In an article from TechCrunch that explains why M&A deals just aren't happening, I quote, "It's not just the unicorn space where big deals aren't happening. So far this year, only 17 well-funded private technology companies, which are defined as having raised $20 million or more in venture investment, have gone on to be acquired for disclosed or reported valuations over $100 million. Meanwhile, in 2016, there were almost that many at valuations of $500 million or more. Apparently, the Trump administration is somehow involved. Per the TechCrunch article, the Trump administration's plan to dramatically reduce taxes on repatriated earnings may be a factor in delaying M&A. Big technology companies are holding billions of dollars in overseas accounts to shelter their earnings from U.S. taxes. Apple alone is estimated to be holding onto a cash stockpile of more than $250 billion, mostly in non-U.S. accounts. The Trump proposal would reportedly cut public companies' income tax rate to 15% from 35%. It would also cut the tax on repatriated offshore earnings to 10%. On to our main story, Google. In last week's podcast, episode 83, I discussed the Trump administration's issue with large technology companies, specifically Amazon, Google, and Facebook. Last week focused on Amazon, but the basic premise is these companies are getting too large, too powerful, and they are ultimately stifling smaller companies from growing and succeeding, and thus stifling job growth. The term monopoly has been thrown about for companies like Google, Amazon, and Facebook. And last week I made a counter argument that a company that's giving away free products like Google and Facebook On a consumer basis, calling them a monopoly is impossible. I still maintain that position based on current definitions of monopoly. However, I happen to listen to a Planet Money podcast, which gives an example of Google's monopoly issues in Europe. So I thought I'd spend a few minutes talking about the information that I learned in Planet Money episode 787. The premise of the episode and the premise of Europe's case against Google as a monopoly is not what you might think it is. 5 or 6 years ago, Google used to have a sub-search engine called Froogle. And Froogle allowed you to look up a product. Let's say this Shure microphone that I use to record my podcast. Let's say I looked up that microphone. Google would give me several companies selling the microphone at different prices, so I can pick the best price. Well, in Europe, there was price search indexes that were available to consumers and were used quite frequently. Again, this was several years ago. And the basis of this monopoly case is that Google ruined their business. And Google didn't ruin their business because they created a competitor called Froogle. The claim is that Google ruined these other European companies because Google lowered their results on their search engine. To clarify, prior to Google releasing Froogle, a consumer in Europe could go to Google, type in price comparison of this Shure microphone, and this other company's search index would come up within the top 10. And once Google turned on Froogle, the competitor's search results ended up showing up at 100 instead of number 3 or 4. And this effectively killed their business. Google lost that case in Europe, and I think they had to pay like 2.3 billion euros, not to the companies that failed, but to the European Union. And I don't know what they're going to do with the money. But as I listened to the podcast and my wife was with me, not only did we get the impression that the European Union case was a bit of a shakedown, but I also think there's an intrinsic issue, and this is my opinion, that these European companies became dependent on Google. How is that Google's problem? There are competitors for search engines. There's Microsoft Bing. There's still Yahoo. Let's hope Yahoo sticks around. In the US, again, I mentioned this last week, there's DuckDuckGo. There were a bunch of other competitors. Remember Ask Jeeves? But consumers had picked a favorite. There were options. Consumers picked what they thought was the best one. But that's free market. So there's an interesting question that has arisen. Does Google have an obligation to help a company who is not compensating them get more traffic to their site or not introduce a competing product that they think they could do a better job at? Admittedly, Froogle turned out to be a not-so-great search engine. So an argument could be made that Google created an inferior product, pushed competitors' rankings further down the list until they went out of business, and then Google effectively folded their own product. You could make a case for that. But does Google have any obligation to help this other company, especially if they're not being compensated? Google is not a public utility. It is a private company. And these other consumer search tools created an entire business plan based on using Google for customers to find their website. I would assume that those websites made their money through the same advertising that Google does. So why would Google be obligated to direct more traffic over to those sites when they can create their own business model? I don't think that's a monopoly, because those European consumers, once they learned about the competing websites, could have easily gone to those websites to continue their price searches. Instead, they opted to go to Google. And I can make the same argument for e-commerce in the United States. People are claiming that Amazon has too much of the market share for e-commerce. But consumers know about Walmart.com. Consumers know about Target.com. Consumers know about Sears.com. Could use that as an example, because they had an advantage over everybody, and they didn't capitalize on that 20 years ago. Why do people go to Amazon.com? It's because they have a better purchasing experience than Target or Walmart's website. Amazon spent money on an intuitive user experience, and they were rewarded for it. But that's not to say that there isn't competition, because there is competition in retail big box stores like Best Buy, Target, and Walmart. Honestly, even if Walmart has a product that I'm looking for at a cheaper price than Amazon, there is an excellent chance that I will not purchase from Walmart. I hate going in the stores, and in many situations, in order to get that better discount, it's a ship to the local store. I have not had pleasant experiences in Walmart, so I will pay for the convenience to have something shipped to my home. And we're going to end it right there. Let's keep it short and simple this week. A programming note, we'll be off next week for vacation, and we will be back on the 28th.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Sourcecast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.